Having said all that, Kath, who do we have?
We've got, back by popular demand, Russ Baker, the editor-in-chief of the website whowhatwhy.org. The hurricanes and Stephen Paddock had knocked it off the front pages, but Russ is here to put Russiagate back on the front page. Welcome back to the show, Russ.
Thank you. Always glad to do it.
I'm sure that, I've seen that you reprised a story on your website on the anniversary of the University of Texas massacre in 1966. In the wake of that horrible Las Vegas story?
I read that. That's what's the 2 days? The 50-year anniversary is the year that people can carry concealed weapons on campus? Isn't that special?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you knew that, Maddie. That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
It was August 1st, 2016.
Welcome
to Texas.
Yeah, welcome to Texas.
But we haven't talked about Russiagate in a while, Russ, and we were hoping you could tell us things like, who is Michael Cohen? Who's Felix Sater? Why do we care about them?
Sure, and if I may, I'd just like to tie together a bunch of themes here. As you mentioned, I'm the founder and the editor-in-chief of a news website called whowhatwhy.org. We're a nonprofit organization, and we don't accept any advertising. And the reason we're structured that way is because we want to do a kind of journalism that I personally felt I couldn't always do when I was working at some of the larger establishment entities, and I hope you don't mind if I just frame this, and then I think it'll be interesting for listeners as we get into the particular issues we'll talk about. Everybody talks about fake news, and of course there really is a problem with fake news and growing evidence that the Russians have sort of mastered the ability to manipulate large sectors of our population into believing things that simply are not true. And that is a very, very real issue that at Who, What, Why we're greatly concerned about. But we're also concerned about another kind of fake news, and that's the fake news that comes out of the establishment. It's a different kind of fake news. It's much more subtle. So, for example, you'll see about a week ago we did a piece by James Galbraith, the son of John F. Kennedy's advisor, the economist, John Kenneth Galbraith. And he writes about how the Vietnam War, that Kennedy actually was trying to get out of Vietnam when he was killed. And this story has been suppressed by the traditional media. And now, PBS had a big, very interesting documentary series about the history of Vietnam, which is all well and good, but it leaves out this absolutely critical point. So there are a lot of things going on where we're not really understanding the full context of what is happening, and I think that applies to some of the things you just mentioned. I think it applies to Russiagate, and I'm happy to talk about that. I think it applies to things that are going on under the Trump administration. I think it applies to U.S. foreign policy. It applies to almost everything, and I know that your show focuses a lot on helping people manage their money and make good, sound investments, and of course, to really be a smart investor, you have to be well informed. And you have to understand what's really going on. And I think we're kind of in a crisis right now because we're not sure what's real and we're not sure what actually is going on. And I think that's kind of the subtext behind all of these stories. So if we talk about the shootings in Las Vegas, I mean, that's just such an astonishing story. Are we ever going to find out what really made this man go off the rails like that? I'm going to say no. Because at Who, What, Why, we talk about the fact that in case after case after case, we don't seem to ever get the real story. We get some kind of a superficial treatment. And you mentioned the shooting long ago in Texas. A man climbed a tower at the University of Texas in Austin with a rifle, and he began just picking off random people. That story is just almost completely forgotten, and now Texas allows concealed carry. You know, practically any nut can carry a gun, and not just carry a gun, they can carry them on some of the college campuses there. You know, you just got to think about the insanity of where we're headed. So all of these stories, moving over to Russiagate.
Russ, can I interrupt you for a second? By the way, I love the theme you're here. My question is, was it 6 months ago, a year ago? So, you'll know this. I don't. Britain came out with that huge review. Now, it was late. It was supposed to have been done a couple of years ago or whatever, of their involvement in Iraq, and it was a scathing indictment on their people and ours. Now, Brits are, maybe they've been around longer. I'm not saying they're perfect. They're not. Some of these other countries seem a little more, shall we say, introspective, retrospective on things like this, instead of just forgetting about all the bad stuff, forgetting all the stupid stuff we did in Vietnam, you know, maybe figuring out who the hell killed Kennedy. I mean, who knows what that was. But I'm saying, why do we just keep moving forward with these wounds open? And it seems like it's our culture to just keep walking forward, cover it up, and keep going. Why is that? I mean, are we going to grow out of that someday, or what's the deal?
Tom, that is such a good question. The best way that I've been able to answer it for myself, and I'm still thinking about this, of course, and thinking about it all the time, is that there's something in the way that our culture has been constructed, and I don't think it's any of us as individuals, but it has been constructed either willfully or accidentally, to the point where we're really not supposed to ask too many questions. And we also have kind of a thing where none of us are supposed to really make waves, and we're not really supposed to sort of question orthodoxies or deeper truths. And what it really comes down to is we get told, shush, you know, that's too upsetting. People can't handle that. And that, I think, is the really, really dangerous thing, because the United States has imposed on much of the world the demand that they remember. I mean, look at Germany. Germany has done such a good job of teaching its people what happened in World War II, how the Nazis came to power, and instituted all kinds of measures to make sure that could never happen. Again, it is a completely different country as a result of that. And you see that again and again, what you're talking about, this kind of reflection. Latin America, they had all those truth commissions, Argentina, Chile, and everything, to see what had happened, that their countries had gone so bad down the drain of authoritarianism and totalitarianism. But in the United States, we, as you say, we never seem to sort of take stock. I did a book, you've had me on to talk about it, called Family of Secrets, where I did a kind of you might call it a post-mortem on the Bush dynasty, and I looked back at this family that had been either president or vice president for 12 out of 20 years to try to figure out what that family was about, and of course the Iraq War came out of that and so many other things, and what I found was, oh my gosh, there's a whole other history that we've never been told. So it's partly that we don't want to talk about these things, but it's also partly that we don't even know about what really happened.
Is it as they used to say on the trading floor, not to be trite, is there so much information it's like taking a drink out of a fire hydrant? Is it part of it?
You know, it's part of that, but it's also because we don't have enough figures out there who are willing and able to narrate and provide the bigger picture. So let's say you talk about, you mentioned Kennedy, you know, you talk about all these things, you know, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, on and on and on. I mean, there have been so many of these shootings of leaders in the United States, and of course, the way it's handled is every single time it's a one-off, it's some nut, there's no more to it, nothing to see here, folks. I mean, just logically, if you study world history, in almost every case where leaders of countries were removed, there was the hand of other powerful interests. That just makes sense. And you know, if you look at the statistics, in the United States, we are told that every single attempt and successful effort to remove a leader was always a nut, which doesn't make any sense because there's so many powerful forces arrayed. Our country has a long history of going into other countries to remove, often violently, elected leaders. So logically, there should be an analysis being provided to say, hey, we may not be getting the whole story here. And that, I think, would answer your concern about the fire hose of information, to step back and provide that kind of analysis on the big picture.
Well, the question when Kath asked you to come back on, you came on, the one I absolutely have to ask you, and I don't know if this is one the listeners want me to, but I think somehow, rightly or wrongly, and part of this came from you know, you telling us about the Bush thing and everything, somehow or another, people have come, I won't say they're comfortable, but they've come to grips with the fact that we're not getting the whole story a lot of places, and there's an awful lot of powerful people in this country, and by the way, we're not one of them. I mean, I think people, they don't like it, but they deal with it. I mean, and probably people around the rest of the world do as well. My antenna went up about this pipeline I don't know how many people put two and two together, like I sometimes do to my regret, where we were going to use all American pipe. Well, it turns out we're not going to use American pipe. It's actually been bought from Canada. And oh, by the way, the guy in Canada who bought part of that company is this oligarch/KGB rich dude, gangman guy from Russia that gave Putin his first nickel to run for in 1991. Now, do you think we're really ready and I'm not saying this where this is going, but you know more about this than me. Are we really ready to know that, that part of the people that we know have been propping up our politicians for decades now are from another country, both Hillary and Trump, probably? Are you think we're ready for that? I don't know. I mean, I'm not.
Well, I think the backstory to that is that money talks, and that it's not, you know, there's always this focus on, you know, the bogeyman, you know, it's this person, it's this group, it's this interest or whatever. It doesn't really work that way. The problem is that we don't take stock of the system and whether the system is truly democratic, if it really is transparent, it really represents our interests. And I think that what we saw with the Russia thing and what we see with the Trumps is rich people do business with rich people, and the rest of us get screwed. And the people who are getting screwed are the American people and the Russian people. And, you know, it's people, you know, there's a lot of attempt to sort of try to affix blame to, as I say, demographically and so on. I don't think it's about that. I think the problem is systemic, and it's harder for us to get our hands around that systemic. You know, we have a piece up on Who, What, Why, about the history of these cartels, these German Nazi cartels, and about the cooperation between American business and these, basically these Nazi concerns. I mean, Standard Oil, you know, IBM, you know, with IG Farben that supplied these Zyklon B gas for the concentration camps. I mean, there was a double dealing. There were all kinds of connections between these firms before, the lead up to it, even during World War II. I mean, essentially, they were traitorous to our own country, and they were doing it because there was money to be made. There was pressure to deliver profits to the shareholders. And I think that's the kind of uncomfortable truth. And in a way, I got to say, I think we're all a little bit complicit because, yeah, I mean, we want our portfolios to do well. And how willing are we to take responsibility for the fact that, you know, our investments may be, for example, perpetuating war or poverty or terror in the world? I mean, these are the kind of big discussions we have to have. What are our values?
Well, Russ, where does the line come? And I have this argument. By the way, if you're in Chicago, I'll be happy to discuss it with you, because I got an interesting group of people we argue with, usually over an adult beverage. There's somehow people have this mentality that it's, if you and I, I mean, if PTI does something, my firm, which, you know, we're honest as the day is long, but if we do something, or if any kind of benefit we get out of somebody, which we never have gotten, somehow we don't deserve it, or something. And I should always be, you know, so beneficial to my client, which I'm going to do anyway. But at some level, all the board members at Bank America need to worry about is the bottom line. Somehow, people have gotten this idea that the further up the chain you go, they don't need any morality. Their entire morality is to the bottom line. But at my level and your level, hey, you can't have this guy telling lies on stocks and jacks. You can't have, you know. I mean, where's the line here where the morality changes? And somehow we've managed to condition people that's okay. That somebody can be a screw up on the Wells Fargo board, and she can be Secretary of Transportation the next day. There's no. Yet if that happened to you or me, that would never happen.
First of all, there is the truth that we expect companies to perform well financially. And there is a tremendous amount of pressure to be fair about it. I mean, if somebody's at a high level in Goldman Sachs, it's their job to do well for Goldman Sachs and those who benefit from it. And, you know, if they can get a favor because they know somebody in the administration or cycle their people through this revolving door, I mean, why wouldn't they do it? You can hardly blame them because that is business. I would say two things. Number one, I think that leaders of all organizations have to be pressured to consider the greater good to some extent. I don't think, you know, there is the fiduciary duty, and as you probably know, a lot of these people actually would get in trouble if they were too civic-minded, because it could be argued that they weren't doing their, you know, their primary job, which was to make money for shareholders. So it's a problem the way that it's baked in. But this is where, and we get in the whole discussion, you know, is there too much government and so on. I mean, this is where government comes in. Government comes in and says, you know, I understand why you have a monopoly. I understand why you have a cartel, because it's good for you. I understand that, but it's not good for the rest of us, and we simply cannot allow it. And that kind of tension, I believe, is very, very healthy. Now, it's interesting to look at the Trump administration, because Trump came in railing against these established orders and talking about the swamp and the corruption in Washington. But if you look at what he's actually doing, I mean, he has more than I think any president turned the government over to very, very wealthy people who are deregulating everything and allowing all of themselves and their buddies to just go tromping right through the field.
Well, the person before him maybe had, I'm going to say, somewhat of the right idea, but had absolutely no idea of the details, to the point where, I mean, their attitude was that businesses are, I mean, and again, I'm in the middle on this, because I think you need, I'm from the trading floor, so I think you need to design things to where things are competitive, because if it's competitive, you don't need very many rules, because people watch themselves. Once it starts not being competitive, you got a problem. You know, so in my opinion. No, so I mean, you can't give loans to people if every time somebody gives a loan, somebody from the government is looking over your shoulder. You'd never build a bridge if every time somebody's welding a joint, somebody's standing next to them watching them. I mean, there's a level where the Obama administration felt that the only reason why a plane doesn't fall out of the sky is because they're watching the United Mechanics. No. Planes aren't going to fall out of the sky because A, it's bad business, and B, most people have some conscience. I think, you know. So, I mean, so they went way too far in a very poor way. They did regulation, but it was all after the barn was done. I mean, all they did was harass people. Well,
that's an interesting point. And of course, you know, I think we've all had experiences with bureaucrats and regulations and frustration. It's a very, very difficult act. And what you're describing, of course, is this kind of swing. And, you know, I'll tell you what'll happen. You know, Trump will do whatever Trump does, and then there will be a reaction publicly. Because it's particularly with these elections being so close, you can always have, you know, half the population more or less on one side, half on the other, but there's just enough people that need to switch their votes, and then the other side comes in, and then you get a reaction. And so, you know, all of these things are going to happen, and they're going to say, oh my God, you know, he can't handle disasters properly, they don't have good decision-making going on, you're going to have more, you know, Madoff situations. You're going to have more bubbles and collapses and things, and nobody wants that either. I agree with you. I mean, being a president and more being the people behind the president, the people who try to shape these things, is really a tremendous responsibility to try to get it right. Because really, the role of a successful government is, as you say, to foster competition, real competition. It's kind of like being a ref. In wrestling,
right.
You know, I mean, you know, when somebody's doing something that is not okay, they jump in and they separate them,
yeah.
And they try to get the thing going the right way again.
Well, I think it has, but I mean, I've seen some stuff on my end, and again, I'd love to talk to you for a long, my significant other's in the real estate business. Somebody somewhere in the last 5 years has decided when you go get a mortgage, if you don't have a job, that you can't get a mortgage. If you could be a plumber making $100,000 for the last 40 years, that's not good enough because you don't have a W-2. Yet people with W-2s get fired. I mean, somebody somewhere, some bureaucrat, nameless, faceless, has made that call. Why? I have some clients here that I've had to liquidate accounts. Guys have got more money than God because they have they're consultants. Well, no, that's not good enough. You can't use your income. You got to pay cash for this place. I mean, who makes these calls, Russ? I mean, some of these decisions come out of these bureaucrats like there's no tomorrow.
Well, Tom, I mean, as a journalist, what I do is I look into exactly the kind of thing you said. You know, you'll say to us, hey, who makes these calls? And we'll say, let us find out. So we go and we start asking around, and I can tell you, in case after case, I'm surprised at the answer. So, for example, the banks, they may say, you know, we're doing this because the government makes us do it. We go and we look at the government and try to find out what happened, and people inside the government, they say, listen, you know why we do this? Because we were pressured by the industry to require this.
Oh, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Yeah, oh yeah. I didn't say I knew the answer. I said somebody. I mean,
well, this is why journalism is so critical. You know, this is why you need that kind of vigilance. I mean, I started Who What Why with nothing. I mean, you talk about a startup. You know, doing things the honest way. I literally, I mean, I just, I basically, you know, used credit cards and stuff, went into debt to get the thing going, and it's been a struggle. We are growing, you know, we're trying to do what we can. We don't have the resources of these big news organizations, but our whole attitude is to be agnostic, to say, we don't know. Hey, that's a great question you ask. Can we put somebody on that project and try to find out? The public needs people who really represent them. And I think in an ideal world, that's what journalism is supposed to do. We're supposed to represent the public interest. We're supposed to be the people's detectives. We're supposed to go out for the people, for Kathleen, for Tom, who have questions about things and want to know, and we're supposed to find out.
Well, where do you think this, the big question, even though I've taken you off the road as I usually do, where's this Russian thing going to land?
Well, you know, I mean, when we started looking at the Russia thing in 2016, I think we were wary of it. We were skeptical, and I believe that's a good position for journalism. There are these narratives that start catching on. They're memes, you know, they're fads, they're whatever they are, and you start getting a pack mentality, and we see this all the time with the media. There's some narrative forms, and you read the Washington Post, you read the New York Times, you watch CNN, and they all more or less are presenting it the same way. You know, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, we have to go in. Well, no, he didn't. I mean, pretty big screw-up there with a lot of consequences, and a lot of people died, and so whatever it is, you have to be careful. Having said that, we were very, very cautious at whowhatwhy.org, but by sometime in the spring, we were like, wow, what are we looking at here? And Kathleen earlier asked about these figures, Felix Sater, Michael Cohen, and so on. These are guys who we started looking at very early, and I'm very proud of what we've done. And we started looking at these people who were around surrounding Donald Trump. But this isn't just about the campaign. This is about these guys who were involved with him years ago. And this is about how the Trump Organization came to rely on people and monies associated in some way with the countries of the former Soviet Union, I would say with the larger ecosystem of a small number of people who managed with the end of communism to grab had connections. They became what they call the oligarchs, and this, I think, is what we're looking at. And so I believe it's real. I believe it's of grave concern. I think what Mueller's doing is very important. I'm concerned that he's not going to be able to go all the way with his investigation because what we talked about earlier, these shocks are too big for the system. And imagine that they discovered that the President of the United States was in the pocket of oligarchs or of another country, and I'm not saying he is, but let's say they discovered that. What are they going to do? I mean, that is a trauma. Imagine how the markets would respond. I mean, these are things that they really have to think very, very carefully
about.
Russ,
I'm going to go south side mentality here. You might think I'm nuts. If you go put up a hotel in Moscow and all these guys want their peace and you regrettably have to pay them off, like being in Chicago, not much different really, I wish it wasn't like that, but I don't have a problem with it necessarily. But if it turns around that all of a sudden I don't have money for my place and I borrow money from the oligarch, now I got a problem. I mean, does that mean me being too south side? I don't care if they come up and say Donald Trump has paid $20 million in bribes over the years overseas. You know what?
I don't think that's what they're finding.
I don't think that's what I'm saying. I don't think that's what they're finding. If they find out that he owes all these guys all these places, then I got an issue with it. I mean, or am I wrong on that?
Well, I mean, it sure looks like he's got a problem in that regard because, you know, and then that pattern of behavior where he was consistently so complimentary of Putin and so unable to even acknowledge the most basic problems. I mean, you remember some of those public statements?
Yeah.
He was trying to present, you know, Russia is a very happy situation. I mean, there really is a very strong authoritarian problem there. Journalists are shot down. Putin's personal enemies are bad things happen to them. I mean, this is a really problematical situation there. And for the President of the United States not to be able to acknowledge any of that, you have to ask, it either means he's incredibly ignorant, which is, I think, probably part of it, but it's also just that he's got some situation there where he can't talk about this stuff. And to your point, the evidence is out there. The statements from from Donald Jr. and Ivanka themselves talking about how important the former Soviet Union was to the Trump Organization. I mean, there it is.
Russ, how about giving yourself a shameless plug? And we're going to talk about the labor numbers in a bit.
Sure. Whowhatwhy.org. We'd love to have people come and sign up for a newsletter. If you support our work, you can donate. It's tax deductible. You can follow us on Twitter, whowhatwhy, and also on Facebook.
Whenever you come to Chicago, are you going to come see us?
I'd love to do that.
That sounds great.
Sounds great, buddy. Thank you very much, as usual.